One man was there who had been ill for 38 years. 38 years. Imagine suffering for 38 years. And after all this time, you hear about a miracle. There's a pool of water with mysterious healing powers. Some people have said that there's an angel of the Lord who descends to the pool at certain times and stirs up the waters. And afterwards, whoever steps in first will be healed. The man who had suffered for 38 years was there that day with hope that it might be his turn. He'd been there day after day, waiting patiently for his turn, but he could not move easily. Not many around the pool could. But somehow, each time he got near the water, when that mysterious healing power activated, someone else pushed ahead of him. Someone with family or friends who could help them to the water. They entered the pool and transformed and then went about their life. But he had no one to help him, and he could not get into the water when it was stirred up. Then, this day, he met a man who changed his life. Jesus had seen him lying there, and he knew that he'd been there a long time. And he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" It seemed like a strange question. This man was by a pool known for its healing waters. Some might have thought it an unnecessary question. And certainly, through the ages, some have found the man's response to the question noteworthy. One scholar I consulted about this gospel text wondered why the man did not immediately say yes when Jesus asked him if he wanted to be made well. Instead of answering the question, he said, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the water when the water is stirred up, and while I am making my way, someone else steps ahead of me." This commentator characterized the man's response to the question as a complaint, as though he was not ready to receive this gift. He really wasn't ready to be healed. But I disagree. I think that he did not have anyone to pay attention to him, and he hadn't for a long time. I think he had not had anyone ask him a question about himself or wonder how he was doing or what he would like for a long time. I think that he was just as heartbroken over his isolation as he was about his physical suffering. And he said the first thing on his mind, which was not to comment on his condition or his desire to be healed, but an explanation of why he had not yet gone into the water, a commentary on the injustice of the situation. He just couldn't reach it, or at least he could not reach it in time. After all, he did not have anyone to help him. That is, until Jesus arrives and takes notice of him. But after Jesus has heard the man's answer, he doesn't help him to step into the water. Instead, he does something unexpected. He says to him, "Stand up, take your mat, and walk." No need of miraculous waters, because the man has encountered a person even more miraculous than this pool. The placement of the story within the Gospel of John is worth noting itself. It comes a chapter after Jesus met a Samaritan woman at a well. He was thirsty and asked for a drink. The woman was shocked because Jews and Samaritans were enemies. Samaritans, like Gentiles, were considered ritually unclean, and so Jesus was breaking religious rules and social boundaries by asking for something to drink, for water, from the woman and sharing her jar. He responds to her shock by telling her that if she knew who he was, she would have asked him for a drink of living water, a spring of water that leads to eternal life. Jesus did not need to take this man to the pool of healing waters because he himself was a spring of living, healing waters. In fact, Jesus had performed an eater miracle between meeting the Samaritan woman at the well and healing the man at the pool. He'd gone back to Cana in Galilee, where he'd performed his first miracle of turning water into wine, and he was approached by a royal official, presumably an official of Herod's court, who asked Jesus to heal his dying son, who was in Capernaum, 15 or 20 miles away. Jesus told the official that his son, and he did, the son's fever breaking at the same time that Jesus spoke those words to the Father. After this, Jesus traveled to Jerusalem, where right away he met the man at the pool. The meeting at the pool was a turning point in Jesus' ministry, as presented in John, because he healed someone on the Sabbath day, breaking the religious law. In response to the accusations that came his way, Jesus said that, "My Father is still working, and I am also working." Not only was he breaking the Sabbath and working on it by healing, but he was calling God his own Father, which, according to the gospel, was making himself equal to God. This was blasphemy, and the religious leaders were now trying to kill Jesus. They were out to get him. The healing of the man at the pool was a culmination of a series of actions in which Jesus reached out to unexpected people, a Samaritan woman, a man who works for Herod, a ruler widely despised by his subjects, and then the sick or disabled man, a marginalized, ritually unclean figure in this time and place. And Jesus had this third unexpected encounter on the Sabbath, setting up his confrontation with the authorities. So taking a look at this really significant encounter in the narrative structure, which builds on Jesus's increasing profile as a miracle worker, points in its aftermath to his identity as the Son of God, and which sets up the events that lead to his crucifixion and resurrection, is there something here in this meeting which, in addition to being a sign of Jesus's divinity, also tells us something important about his message for the world? Let's start by looking at a misunderstanding of what it means. When instead of helping the man to the pool, Jesus says, "Stand up, take your mat, and walk," some have read this as Jesus saying that God helps those who help themselves. But it's not saying that. And by the way, that phrase is not found in the Bible anywhere, despite the fact that a majority of American Christians believe this. Rather than Jesus empowering the man to get over a supposed victim mentality, put on a positive attitude, and go out and live his life on his own terms as a strong individual, what I think Jesus is doing is restoring the man to the fullness of life, which includes life in community, people helping people, including through encouraging words like the ones Jesus speaks. I say this because of the man's response. It was not a simple yes, I would like to be healed. It's a story. No one has listened to him for a long time, and he needs to be heard. He regrets not only that he hasn't been healed, but that no one has helped him. I believe that this miracle story shows us that sometimes healing is more than physical. It's also psychological, social, and spiritual. There's something, in fact, about telling our stories that makes us well. This past week, I had the privilege of hearing stories that heal. One of the ways Grace Church gives back to our community is by offering support to Homecoming, a program that serves veterans who have experienced homelessness. The goal of Homecoming is to aid in the process of recovery from the trauma of homelessness and to assist participants develop vital life skills that will help them build a sustainable, successful future. For 2 hours twice a week for 14 weeks, the veterans and homecoming create a new community together as they learn about building support systems, stress management techniques, and career development. In addition to the group sessions, participants meet one-on-one with mentors who help them set and achieve goals, and also with social workers who help them access job training, housing, and other resources. Grace Church parishioners have been involved as mentors since the beginning of homecoming, and twice a year we sponsor and host the graduation ceremony and dinner. After welcoming remarks and an opening prayer, the evening begins with the playing of the national anthem as the gathering honors the United States flag, something I find moving as I see these individuals pay homage to the flag for a country they'd served and yet had left them behind. After dinner, the graduates go up to the front and one by one, they share their stories. The public sharing of the stories of their stories is an integral component of the program's curriculum. So it wasn't just a celebratory affair. Real work was happening. I listened intently to each of the graduates' electrifying 5-minute talks, and common themes emerged in each. On the one hand, childhood abuse and neglect, and the other, adult substance abuse, and the resulting instability in their professional and personal lives that led to their homelessness. They were dealt a bad hand in life. And yes, they didn't always make good decisions about how to play that bad deck they'd been given. But eventually they sought help, and they'd overcome so many obstacles. And now they were on a path to healing and wholeness. They'd strengthened bonds with their families and friends, and now they had a new community. And they spoke so warmly of their homecoming brothers and sisters and their mentors. Watching the graduates give their speeches, I was struck by the vulnerability these graduates showed and what a gift it was to share this moment with them. And I also wondered just how might their lives have been different if people had listened to their stories earlier. Do you want to be made well? When Jesus healed the man at the pool, he did not just heal him physically. That seems like it would have been enough, but by entering into conversation with him and listening to part of his story, Jesus also extended healing for the man's spirit. Connection heals. Two people present to one another, one sharing, another listening. It starts there. Healing is not just physical. It's also social, psychological, and spiritual. When we share our stories of pain and struggle, we can begin the work of healing those traumas. And when we offer the gift of a listening ear, we participate in that person's healing. And in the end, that's a gift not just for them, but also for us. To be a healing presence in the life of another is also a way of bringing wholeness into our own lives. Listening to another's story helps us to develop compassion. And as we better understand the people around us and where they've come from and where they are, we will be less judgmental of their situations. Together, these two gifts, compassion and a non-judgmental attitude, will help bring us more joy and peace in our lives. The invitation to stand up, take our mat, and walk is as much for those who think of themselves as well as it is for those who struggle. And as we develop internal habits that increase our sense of joy and peace, we will be strengthened to reach out to the world in service and to make a difference. Sometimes it'll mean advocating structural things that help provide support for people like veterans who need help. But sometimes we can reach out in small ways. You don't have to go out and perform miracles to heal. Just be present with people. That itself is a healing thing. treat them with the same respect and dignity you hope to be treated with yourself. Sometimes it might mean stopping to meet the gaze of a person on the street who asks you for help. Maybe it means pausing for a moment to ask about your neighbor and actually mean it when you say, "Have a good day," as you part ways, as you leave your building. Deep down, we all want to be made well. So I hope that we will stand up, take our mats, and walk in the way that Christ invites us to follow, a way of openness to the gift of community, to vulnerability, and to the healing that can come through sharing our lives and our stories. It is through this sharing that we experience the love of Christ that he's given us. And it is through this love, it is through Christ, that we will be healed. Amen.